strange tidings concerning the doctor had come from Paris. Mr. Lorry was on his way to meet Tellson's ward and explain to her the facts of her early life. This was a duty from which the kind-hearted banker shrank. When, at the inn, he saw the slight, golden-haired girl who came to meet him, his heart almost failed him completely. His eyes rested upon a short, slight, pretty figure, with a quantity of golden hair and a pair of blue eyes that met his own with an inquiring look. Suddenly, his thoughts flashed to a vivid likeness of a child whom he had held in his arms on the passage back across the channel one cold time. She curtsied to him, and he made her a bow.
"It is very difficult to begin," he told her. Then, as quickly as possible, he informed her of her father's disappearance and her mother's resolve that she grow up in ignorance of her father's fate, believing him to be dead.
By this time, she had clasped his wrist in her hands for support. "Miss Manette," he continued, "your mother took this course with you to spare you. She died, broken-hearted, having never slackened her unavailing search for your father. And when she left you at 2 years old, she did so without leaving the dark cloud upon you of living in uncertainty, whether your father soon wore his heart out in prison or wasted there through many lingering years." He felt his wrist held closer, and he stopped for a moment. "But," he said slowly, continuing his tale, "he has been found. He is alive. Greatly changed, it is too probable. Almost a wreck, it is possible. We hope for the best. Still, he is alive. Your father has been taken to the house of an old servant in Paris. That is where we are going. I, to identify him if able. You, to restore him to life, love, duty, rest and comfort." A shiver ran through her frame and from it through his. In a low, distinct, awe-stricken voice, she murmured, as if in a dream, "I am going to see his ghost, not him." It was truly a ghost they saw when, upon their arrival in Paris, they were finally taken to Dr. Manette. The servant who had sheltered the doctor was a man by the name of Defarge, who, with his wife, kept a wine shop in the obscure district of Saint Antoine. Here, one glimpsed the dregs of humanity, examples of people who had undergone a terrible grinding and regrinding, who shivered at every corner, passed in and out of every doorway. The mill that ground them down was the one that grinds young people old. The children had ancient faces and grave voices. Upon them, and upon the faces of the grown, was the sign, hunger. Defarge, who as a boy had served Dr. Manette, was a bull-necked, martial-looking man of 30. He was a dark man, who had good eyes with a good, bold breadth between them, good-humoured-looking on the whole, but implacable-looking too. Defarge was a man of strong resolution and self-purpose, a man not desirable to be met rushing down a narrow pass with a gulf on either side, for nothing would turn him. Madame Defarge, his wife, was a stout woman of about his own age, with a watchful eye that seldom seemed to look at anything in particular. She had large hands, heavily ringed, a steady face, strong features, and a great composure of manner. It was Defarge who conducted Lucy and Mr. Lorry to where Dr. Manette was quartered, behind a locked door, in the attic of a miserable house near the wine shop. There, in the darkened garret, a white-haired man sat on a low bench. A thin ray of light from a nearby window showed him working on an unfinished shoe, a pastime he had learned in prison. He had a ragged white beard, a hollow face, and exceedingly bright eyes. The yellow rags of his shirt lay open at the throat, showing his body to be withered and worn. As Defarge drew the window open a little more, the man had put up a hand between his eyes and the larger ray of light. It seemed that the very bones of his hands were transparent. So he sat, with a steadfastly vacant gaze, pausing his work.
"Are you going to finish that pair of shoes today?" asked Defarge. "What did you say?"
The doctor's faint voice was pitiful and dreadful to hear. More so, because it was not faint from physical weakness, but rather it was faint from his solitude and its disuse.
"Do you mean to finish that pair of shoes today?" repeated Defarge.
"I can't say that I mean to," Manette responded wearily. "I suppose so, I don't know." But the question reminded him of his work, and he bent over it again.